right. Well, with that being said, that was some more Limp Bizkit, as was in episode 4. But that song is called Angels, and I like that song. So I wasn't expecting to do another episode so fast, but I got to thinking. I'm like, you know what? I should record this stuff while it's on my mind, and I have something on my mind. And I want to talk about a big thing for me, especially having ADHD, and that's anxiety. Now, I get anxious just talking about my anxiety. And it has... I got my first panic attack when I was probably, and this is going to sound a little crazy, I think I was probably about 9 years old. And I remember sitting there in the living room with my mom. Me and my mother had a very complicated relationship. So one of the times I was actually living with my mom, I remember it very vividly because, like I said, anxiety. I was sitting next to the couch. My mom was sitting on the couch. She was smoking her cigarette as normal. And I started to feel very not myself. Like this whole, how do I explain it? A feeling of dread or doom would just come over me. And I didn't understand why. I had no clue. But it made me feel like I was going to die. Quite literally. Like, I felt like I was not going to exist anymore. And at 9 years old, I had no idea what that felt like. We didn't have cable TV. We didn't have any of that stuff. You know what I mean? So for me to feel like that and not know what anything was, I consulted my mom and I said, "Mom, you know, I don't feel right. I don't." And she's like, "What's wrong?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I just don't feel right." And she just dismissed it. "Ah, you'll be fine. Just, you know, whatever." And I remember just feeling this overwhelming feeling of dread and doom and just not going to be here anymore, and it scared the living shit out of me. And after that day, after I knew what it felt like, I would go through every day just hoping that I didn't feel like that again, you know? And I guess being so young, I kind of shook it off and forgot about it, but every once in a while it would come back, you know? And it kept me from doing a lot of things that I wanted to do. It kept me from doing them. I was very anxious about it. Anytime I started feeling nervous, I would stop doing whatever I was doing. And it made it very hard to pursue anything that I wanted to do, whether it would be talking to girls or, I don't know, hanging out with friends or whatever. So I did do some of those things. I did talk to friends. I did eventually forget about those couple of days or weeks or whatever were on my mind. And I went about my business and I turned back into being a regular child. I don't remember really any anxiety attacks after that until I was probably 12 or 13. Now let me just mention that my grandpa, my pop-up John, who I loved very dearly, passed away when I was almost 7 years old. I never got any closure from that. I never got to go to his funeral. I never got to say goodbye to him. He was there one day and just not there the next day, you know, with very little explanation. So I think that's kind of where some of the anxiety came from. So when I was 12, me and my grandmother and my grandfather, my step-grandfather, we call him Pappy or Joe, we went to Disney World. And on the way back from Disney World, we stopped off. We were stopping and seeing all these sightseeing things, like, you know, Kissimmee, Florida. I used to call it Kissimmee. My grandmother got a kick out of that, by the way. We stopped at Kissimmee, Florida. We stopped off at, you know, obviously Walt Disney World. We got to, that's where I learned about Ponce de Leon and, you know, Christopher Columbus wasn't the first person to find America, yada, yada, yada. We on the way back, we stopped at Harper's Ferry, Gettysburg. And when we were in Gettysburg, my grandfather used to chase me around. Well, when this one time when he was chasing me, we were in a graveyard. Go figure, right? Not having an anxiety attack in a graveyard at 12 years old. That was kind of weird, right? And he fell and he tripped and he hit his chest on one of the gravestones. And I'm not going to lie, that he hit it pretty hard. Like, I heard a big, you know, thud. So my grandmother was very concerned about him. Yeah, he had a big bruise on his chest and it was like right in the center of his chest too, you know? So couple days go by, my grandfather is out in the backyard mowing the grass, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm outside playing because I live next door with my mom, and I see him hurry up and stop the mower, and he starts walking to the house, and he's holding his chest. So he walks in. Next thing I know, my grandmother comes running out in a panic, tells my grandmother that my grandfather has to go to the hospital. They get in the car. And they take off, and I knew something was wrong. So, turns out, my grandfather, and, you know, I'm getting anxious talking about this because, well, anxiety. Turns out he had a very serious, massive heart attack, which was mystifying because he walked to the car, like, you know. Anyway, he was okay. He wasn't okay, but he was okay. You know, he was alive. He was kicking. He was, you know, he obviously had to go to the doctors and watch his diet and a bunch of other stuff. But that, just that sight of him holding his chest and the color in his face and how scared he looked gave me more anxiety. So I started having panic attacks again. All I thought about was where my pop-up John passed away, and now, you know, I was afraid that my pappy was going to pass away, someone who I cared dearly for. And yeah, I just started getting those moments of dread again, and I would tell my mom, and she wouldn't care. And then I would get these bouts of, like, throwing up. You know, I would get so anxious, I guess, or my hormones were going. I don't know. I was 12 years old, so I was just starting to hit puberty and starting to figure out, you know, about girls and all that other stuff. So it was a very weird time. That's when my anxiety really started peaking. Throw that into my friends playing pranks on me. And stuff. And, you know, we had some weird happenings here at my house in the woods because, you know, we live near the Pine Barrens, well, in adjacent to the Pine Barrens. And my mom would always constantly say that, you know, you're a bad little ass, you know, the devil's coming to get you. And it was horrible. And then my imagination started running wild and then the anxiety, and it's just full blown. So, fast forward, you know, 2-3 years. And, you know, again, I eventually moved on and stopped thinking about all the anxiety stuff. And I got back to a normal life. And, I mean, I still had little panic attacks here and there, but nowhere near as bad as what they were. But at this point I was, like I said, 12, 13, so I let it keep me from talking to girls. I didn't really talk to girls in school. I had a couple friends in elementary school. I won't mention their names because, you know, I don't know if they want to be on a podcast or not. I have no idea how popular this is going to get. But Yeah, it stopped me from doing a lot of things. I was afraid to run because I thought that I was going to have a heart attack. I was afraid to swim because I thought I was going to have a heart attack while I was swimming. I was afraid to put myself in any situation where I would get nervous or anxious because my heart would start beating real fast, and I was afraid that I was going to literally die. Every day after watching my grandfather have that heart attack, I thought that I was also going to have one. So just imagine being 12, 13 years old, and every time your heart rate got up or you got nervous or you got anxious, which, hello, hormones, that's normal, you thought you were going to die. And that's very scary for somebody. I mean, I don't care who you are. That's some scary shit. And like I said, a couple years passed. I kind of got it, put it in the back of my mind. Went about my normal teenage life. I was still living with my mom when I was about, I think it was 15. 14, I started smoking. That was, let me tell you, that was the biggest mistake I have ever made in my life. My mom used to give me a note, a handwritten note, and I would go down to the Cumberland Farms. Now, this was back in, let's see, I was born in 73, so 83, maybe 86, 87, I think I was like 13, 14 years old. I would go get her cigarettes with a note and $1.25 in change or whatever she gave me. And I would give that to the cashier and they would give me her Marlboro Lights. It was Marlboro Light 100s. And one day I came home and I sat on the couch next to her and I said, I just took out a cigarette and I lit it up and I started smoking it. And she goes, what the fuck do you think you're doing? And I said, same thing you're fucking doing. And that was when I started smoking. Me and my friend, like I said, I'm not going to mention no names. I had just met him. He moved in behind my house. And we instantly became friends. We're still friends till this day. And, well, he started smoking with me. We were a bad influence on each other. Let me tell you. So I didn't know that, but at the time, that was also kicking up my anxiety. So basically at the age of 14, I sat around doing nothing, sitting in my room, listening to music, smoking, and just drinking tons of soda. Probably 2 2-liters of soda a day. And mix that with not eating right. So ADHD, anxiety, smoking, horrible combination, right? So when I was 15, I think it was about 15 and a half, close to 16, I was going to school, but I was having a rough time in school. I just started, I think, ninth grade, and my mom came home one day, as my mom has done several times throughout my life, decided that she just didn't want to be there anymore. So she told my dad, she brought home this guy. I'm not going to mention his name either. And told my dad flat out that she did not want to be with him anymore. And that she was going to take all 3 children, which was me and my 2 brothers, and she was leaving. So now, this woman had no idea where she was going, no idea what she was doing. She didn't even realize, for some awful reason, that my grandmother had custody of me. And my grandmother just let her take me. Like, what the hell was that? You know what I mean? I'm still upset about that to this day. So she took me and this guy, and like I said earlier in earlier podcast, the timeline is fuzzy for me for some reason. I don't understand why. Maybe everything just happened too quick. I remember going to my aunt's, a couple other things. But I'll just try to explain it the best I can. Because it has to deal with the onset of more anxiety. So with everything going on, I forgot completely about my anxiety. I was so busy dealing with everyday life crap and teenager crap that my anxiety just kind of took a back seat. So I remember going, I think we went to my aunt's house, or maybe I think we were living in the back. See, it's so hazy. I just remember being at my aunt's house, and I was staying in the room in a pair of bunk beds. My mom and her boyfriend slept on the bottom bunk. I slept on the top bunk. My brothers slept out in the living room or whatever they were doing. I don't really remember. And like I said, I think it was about 15 and a half. I remember as soon as I turned 16, my mom did not change the bus route or anything. So they kicked me out of school. And I actually liked school. Like, school was nice for me. I enjoyed it, you know. It was a time away from home. So I got kicked out of school. And my mom and my uncle were fighting, who we were staying with. That turned into a whole thing. For some reason, that side of my family like to choke each other. I don't understand why. I don't get it. I have no idea. I could not deal with that stress and with that crap. So my uncle strangled my mom a couple times, or tried to, and then my mom's boyfriend stood in and, you know, stopped it. And then he went and called his brother, called my other uncle. And these uncles were related by marriage. These were my stepdad's family, the man she left. He came over, and then he started fighting with my mom, and he grabbed my mom around the neck. He was considerably bigger than my other uncle. So I stepped in to do something. I was sitting on the top bunk, and I pushed him to get him off my mom, and he punched me in the face. It hurt, but I had, I guess, adrenaline going, so I wasn't worried about it. But when he hit me, I was like a little shocked, you know? So he grabbed her again, and then my mom's boyfriend tried jumping on top of him or whatever, and he pushed him off and hit his head into the bunk beds. And so I pushed him again, and he punched me again, and I got down off the top bunk, and I did the best I could to keep him from hitting my mom. I won't go in the details, but he did stop hitting my mom. He left, and I left because I didn't want to be there no more, and he came back after me with a shotgun. At least that's what they told me anyway. I ran off in the woods. I was not there. I refused to be there. My anxiety got the best of me. I was out. I was gone. I was not going the fuck back there. So, I ended up going to stay at the neighbor's house, who I had got to be good friends with. So, I ended up staying with the neighbor. Now, like I said, I was 15 and a half years old. He had an empty room, so he let me stay in an empty room, and thank God he did, because I don't know where the frick I would have went if I didn't. Somehow my mom left and took me with her. I don't remember exactly how it happened. I don't know. Like I said, it's fuzzy. We ended up in Wildwood. Anyway, long story short, the anxiety took a back seat then from all that stuff that was going on. And I ended up at the age of 17 drinking a lot. Now, I don't know if I was an alcoholic. I couldn't tell you. I just know that I enjoyed drinking, and I drank almost every night and every weekend. Sometimes I went to school like that because, you know, hey, it helped me deal. And nobody knew, I mean, except for the people that I went, that I had parties with or went to parties with. And, I drank like that for quite a while, and then I stopped. I started hanging around with my cousin. I think I was probably, I'd done lost my driver's license at this time. And I'll never forget the day that my anxiety came back. I was playing Nintendo. I just got done eating Taco Bell. I think I was about 20 years old because my license was suspended, so I couldn't leave the house. I did have a job, but I rode my bike there because I had to pay my fines. But I was home with my cousin. My cousin was staying with me. And all of a sudden, I felt this weird flutter in my chest, you know? And I didn't know it, but that time, my anxiety would come back full force. Like, I understood a lot more about what was going on now, and so much crap just hit me all at once. Like, it was like everything that traumatic had happened over that 5 years just hit me like a freight train. And I ended up having panic attacks so bad that I thought I was literally dying. I was sweating. I was shaking. I actually went as far, and I never go to the doctor. I actually went to the hospital and got checked out, had blood work done and everything, and they said everything was perfect. So I know they were anxiety attacks. Obviously, because, you know, I'm 51 years old now and I'm still here. I didn't leave the house for probably, I would guess, at least 9 to 12 months. I stayed in the house. I did absolutely nothing. My grandmother was screaming at me to get a job. My grandfather was screaming at me to get a job. Multiple fights with my grandparents over it. My stepdad, who I was staying with, I skipped a part. I ended up moving back in with my stepdad to go back to school. And I did graduate, by the way, actually. So I graduated at the age of 20. That's before the anxiety. The anxiety started after I graduated. And it was really bad. Like, I couldn't go outside. I was afraid I was going to have a heart attack and be embarrassed because I died in front of somebody. I was afraid of leaving my grandmother, leaving my grandfather, leaving my dad. I was so terrified. And I ended up being afraid to go to the doctors because I was afraid that they weren't finding nothing wrong with me, but something was still wrong. There wasn't Google. You couldn't Google anything. Although now, if you Google, oh, my middle finger hurts, you end up, you know, with like freaking testicular cancer. So you can't trust Google now anyway. But it was very scary. And my grandmother, bless her heart, I miss her so much. She ended up seeing an advertisement on TV for a cassette set, audio tapes that taught you how to naturally deal with anxiety. She bought me this set, and I'll never forget it because it was like $300. And it was like 20 tapes. I still have the set to this day. I have the whole entire set and the book to go with it. And she gave me that, and I sat there and listened to these tapes. And through breathing exercises and, you know, kind of tricking my mind, it helped me get better. Better enough to where I could go out, get a job, and, you know, be a regular member of society again. And I listen to them frequently. I used to listen to them a lot. I still use the breathing exercises to this day. But there are instances in my life, even to this day, that my anxiety just gets the best of me. I ended up meeting a woman and we got married. My anxiety was at bay. I didn't really have any attacks. I think I was 22 when I got married. Or it might have been 24. I'm not really too sure. I think I'm 24. But after I got married, that changed the dynamic, you know? And even though I shouldn't have thought this way, my anxiety started kicking in, and I started thinking, oh, well, what if she does to me what my mom did to my dad? Well, then that started kicking in, and then, you know, I'm an overthinker, and, you know, the ADHD, and now the anxiety's kicking back in, and I'm like, oh, my God, what if she's cheating on me? What if she's going to leave me? What if this? What if that? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And my anxiety went nuts. And I ended up, being controlling. Where are you going? What are you doing? Why are you going? Why are you going to your sister's? Just a ton of questions. And it was nothing. It wasn't meant to be controlling. But looking back at it now, I can see that that was very controlling. Well, I kind of manifested that destiny for myself, because 6 months after we got married, she did end up cheating on me. I do not blame her, because my anxiety and my overthinking thought of every scenario, and I forced the worst scenario. So, I don't blame her. I'm not mad at her. I have no, ill intentions towards her. But, you know, she did what I accused her of doing. So, we ended up getting divorced. We were married for, I think, like a year and like 8 months or something like that. We weren't married for very long. I ended up getting divorced at, I think, 26. We had a house. The way she went about it was wrong. She did cheat on me. She did take the money out of the bank account, whatever, yada, yada, yada. That's all in the past. My mom ended up, moving in with me for a little while. And I decided that I was going to quit smoking. I smoked from 14 to 26. And I quit smoking when my wife left. Or did I quit? No, I quit smoking. I'm sorry. Yeah, I quit smoking. I don't know. I don't remember. Anyway, I think I quit smoking. And then when I was still living in the same place, I decided to stay where me and my wife, my ex-wife, bought the place. I ended up staying there, keeping a car. I gave her a car, yada, yada. It was a big mess. So my anxiety came back again even more because, you know, now I'm divorced and, you know, hey, nobody's going to want me, blah, 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 27 years old, 26 years old, however old I was. Well, I ended up meeting somebody because I started drinking again. And this time I started drinking pretty heavy. I was drinking with my cousin because he was staying with me, drinking with friends, whoever I could drink with. So I was divorced, drinking, trying to cover up the anxiety, and I guess it worked because I ended up meeting somebody. We ended up getting along very well, and it was not an intentional getting together. It just kind of ended up to we ended up together. And we ended up having a daughter. Well, I quit drinking because, you know, what kind of person who's going to drink, you know, kids, whatever. So I stopped. And I got a decent job. First one I found that looked like made money. And again, the anxiety was at bay. It didn't bother me. Everything was going good. You know, I had a daughter on the way. I had a great woman. I was happy, you know, especially after being divorced. I didn't think I was ever going to find anybody. And she was stupid enough to be with me. So, hey, that was great for me. You know what I mean? And everything was going good. And then we had a son. Well, we were going to have a son. She ended up miscarrying, which was very unfortunate. We ended up having some problems because of that. And she thought she was in the hospital when this happened, but she was not. I ended up fucking up, and I ended up cheating on her with a friend of mine, which I shouldn't have. I regret that every single day. She thinks she was in the hospital. She wasn't. She was over her friend's house. And again, not mentioning no names. So that particular indiscretion led to me having the anxiety attacks again. Because I was dishonest with her. I am not a dishonest person. I hate lying. I hate all that stuff. So that ended up kicking my anxiety up even more again. And then I thought, you know, that she was going to do that. So we had a couple problems. We worked them out. We ended up getting engaged. And then she ended up getting pregnant again with my son, my oldest son. Now, she has a son, too, from a previous relationship. And I considered him my kid at this point. I mean, my daughter was a year and a half old. He was 2 years old, 2.5 years old. So I consider him my son now. And we're engaged. So he's my kid, pretty much. So we end up having a son, my oldest son, biological son. And, you know, now my anxiety is kicking even more. I'm working every day, you know, I'm working my ass off. And from when I was partying before I met her, my electric bill in my house got so expensive that they turned it off. Now, my son was 6 months old. My daughter was a year and a half old, 2 months old, or 2 years old. So I could not be in a house with no electricity. And I could not pay it. It was like $3,000. It was an obscene amount. I tried everywhere. You know, I didn't want to ask my grandmother. I wanted to do it on my own. So we moved in with her mom. And that was the biggest mistake we ever made. And I know she's probably going to end up listening to this, and she's going to know what I'm talking about and who I'm talking about, but that's okay because it's the honest to God's truth, and it is what it is. So we ended up moving in with her mom. So it was me, my fiance, my daughter, my son, and then her brother, her mom, her sisters, her couple nephews, whatever, her other son. And tensions got a little high, you know. Her mom was accusing me of cheating on her. And like I said, I already had one discrepancy that she didn't know about, so that got my anxiety going more. So then I got real defensive, but I was only I only had that one indiscretion. I've never cheated on her other than that one time. Never before that, never after that. So her mom was accusing me, you know, hey, no cable guy works till 11 o'clock at night, blah, blah, blah. But I was legitimately working. They had me working late nights. I was taking all the jobs that I could to try to make enough money to get the hell out of her house because we weren't getting along. My ex kept telling me, hey, you know, we need to get out of here. We need to do this. We need to do that, blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, I got this. So I worked as much as I could. I finally found a place, but the downfall was that it was attached to my friend's and his wife. It was attached to the back of their house, so it was an apartment. So, but the problem is that friend's wife was the one that I cheated with. But that was the only place we could find. Now, me and my friend's wife were on good terms. We understood it was a mistake and it would never happen again, and it never did. It never went anywhere else. That was it. That was the extent of it. One time, boom, done, over with. I realized how much I loved my fiance, so it never happened again, and I never even looked at another woman. But while we were there, you know, things happened. They were, you know, we were not getting along. There was stress from her side of the family. It just was a bad thing, you know? So my anxiety was kicking in again. And I did the same thing, you know, that I did with my ex-wife. Hey, you know, blah, 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 blah. Where are you going? What are you doing? And she ended up starting to go out with her girlfriend and her boyfriend, her girlfriend and her boyfriend's, you know what I mean? So they ended up going out drinking or whatever. And, yeah, things just got real rocky. And, you know, she ended up going to her friend's house to stay. And I'll never forget on the drive over there, you know, anxiety going crazy again. And, you know, I told her, hey, listen, you know, if this is the last of this particular relationship, I hope that, you know, you think about it. And at the end of this, we end up back together. Well, I ended up figuring that she knew about me and my friend's wife. And I couldn't take it anymore. My conscience and my anxiety level was so high. I just told her. And she was at her friend's house. And I'll never forget the look on her face. And I know she loved me and I know she cared about me. She was absolutely devastated. All the color left her face because I did the one thing to her that I promised I would never do. And I knew at that moment that that relationship was never going to be the same again. So, I don't know what she did while she was broken up with me. She ended up seeing somebody else. We had this whole mess with courts or whatever with the kids. One thing led to another. Her story is not my story to tell, so that's her story to tell. I'm not going to get into that. So my anxiety was top shelf, going to courts. And like I said, I was never a public speaker. So going up in front of a judge to me was, oh my God, it was horrible. I was so stressed and heart palpitations, sweating. Oh my God. But it was for my kids, you know? So I ended up doing that. And I don't regret anything I've done for my children. Never once. anxiety at all. But now it's to the point where, fast forward a few years, you know, I'm taking care of my grandparents, and my anxiety was not too bad. Every once in a while, we get a little out of control. I would do my breathing exercises, do my brain rewire chemical thing, you know, that I learned. When I was taking care of my grandparents, I think it was like 2016, we signed, it might have been sooner, 2012, somewhere around there. We signed power of attorneys, we did the wills, we did whatever, you know. Because my grandmother had sisters, but she didn't really get along with them. And they may even listen to this, but I don't care. Because she really didn't get along with them. And she never told me why. She just said that when she passed away or when she became unable to take care of things, that she did not want her sisters to get anything. And I promised her that that's what I would do. So we signed all the paperwork, dotted all the I's, crossed all the T's, did everything we could. And then, of course, the time came where my grandmother started getting very, very bad dementia. And my grandmother stopped really taking care of my grandfather. So now my grandfather was starting to take care of himself. Well, he wasn't eating very well. And I did not know this. And he ended up having a heart attack. So that sent my anxiety back up. Because now I took him to the doctor. He drove himself, by the way, and parked all the way at the other end of the hospital parking lot so no one would hurt his precious car, and then walked in and said, hey, I'm having a heart attack. Well, he ended up having to have a stent put in and put on more medication. And so I'm like, okay, well, now it's time to take care of my grandfather. So I started taking care of his medications. I started, you know, helping him watch what he was eating. You know, I had to get on about eating egg whites and, you know, this and that, and because he was a diabetic. Well, fast forward about a year. I think it was around 2019, I think, somewhere around there. Maybe 2020. The pandemic happened, and he started getting very... My grandmother was sleeping a lot. He started getting very combative with her. She would frustrate him and kind of set him off on what my grandmother used to call high C. So he would get very irate and not violent, but just very disrespectful and very rude and... You know how older people are. I think he was probably 80 at the time, 81. So I started noticing signs of dementia. And I took him to the doctor. He was shaking a lot. And the doctor said, I think he may have Parkinson's. So we gave him like a cognitive test and everything. And he pulled me aside after one of the doctor's visits, and he said, Jay, I think it's time that you take power of attorney of your grandfather. And I said, okay, not a problem. So the power of attorney took effect. He wrote me, you know, gave me a nice medical note, doctor note, you know, for the bank. So I gave that to the bank, and I gave it to all his financial stuff and everything. You know, what I thought was 100% to help take care of my grandparents. So, my grandmother used to take care of all the bills. My grandfather didn't know how to do this. So, when I took over everything, I took it to the bank. They gave me control over the bank accounts. He had little over $10,000 in the bank account. But then I started checking the mortgage, and the they had a storage facility that they were paying $150 a month to, and a bunch of other bills. Discover bill was like $20,000. It was outrageous, right? So I started paying all of this. I had to get caught up on the mortgage. The mortgage was like 2-3 payments behind. The mortgage was like $1,500 a month. So I paid that, started paying the other bills. Well, anyway, it went from $10,000 to like $2,200, $2,300. Well, now my grandfather was going to the bank in his car. He still had his wits about driving. He had no problem driving. The bank was right down the street, and he would go in there and talk to the lady, and she would be like, he would be like, oh, how's, you know, what's my bank account look like? And apparently she thought that I was stealing from them. And he told her, now I gave her a note from her, his doctor, stating that he had dementia. And she told him that, I think Jay's stealing from you. And right away he came home and he goes, Jay, come here. Can I talk to you? And I was like, oh boy. And then he's like, I just talked to so-and-so, again, not mentioning any names, from the bank. She said, you're stealing from me. So we called the police. My anxiety went nuts. I started having heart palpitations. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. I took my blood pressure. It was 196 over 120. I should have been in a hospital. I probably almost died. Anyway, long story short, cops came out, looked at all the paperwork. I showed them all the proof. There was no case. They called elder services. They came out, did an investigation. Everything was fine. Obviously, I wasn't stealing from them. I don't steal from nobody. The only time I have something is when I work for it. So, but that being said, my anxiety, it's too late. My anxiety was through the roof. That was it. I was done. My anxiety went nuts because every day after that, he accused me of stealing from him. She didn't even realize what she set in motion. I had to get screamed at almost every morning when I gave him his medication. Every single morning. He accused me of drugging him. He accused me of stealing from him. One day he said, I'm going to go over to Violent and I'm going to get someone who's going to take care of you. And I'm like, okay, Pappy, you know, you're okay, blah, blah, blah. I had to explain to him time and time again that he doesn't have $10,000 in the bank and blah, 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 yada, 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 whatever. Well, he went and he got my aunt, which was my mom's sister, which my grandmother did not want. My aunt came over and took him to a lawyer, even though I had power of attorney and had this whole doctor's note, notarized and everything, from the doctor saying that he had dementia and that he was not able to care for himself. She went and got power of attorney over him because he was lucid enough at that particular moment to say, oh yeah, I want to give her power of attorney. So, like I said, my anxiety was through the roof. This was in 2020. So, I'm running a full-time business, taking care of my grandparents, do this, do that. I'm doing everything, you know, take care of my dad, take care of my kids. So, she ends up getting power of attorney of them. And then she tries to kick me out of the house. I said, well, I still have power of attorney of my grandmother. And she said, ha, we'll see how long that till that lasts. She tried to take my grandmother over there to get power of attorney, but my grandmother was completely out of it. And even the lawyer was like, no, I can't give you power of attorney over her. She's obviously not cognitive enough to get power of attorney over. So, she ended up firing that lawyer because I ended up talking to him and told him the situation. He obviously didn't want to represent her no more. So she ended up hiring another one. Then she wouldn't even tell me that lawyer's name. So I went and got a lawyer, and I got another power of attorney, and my grandfather signed it. And I said, well, either they'll acknowledge this power of attorney and say it's good, or they'll say he's not cognitive enough, and then the other power of attorney is no good either, because he obviously wasn't in his right mind to sign the other one. And it'll just go back to the original. So my lawyer ended up talking to her lawyer, and she fired him because he wouldn't do what she said. So then she took him to a third lawyer and paid that lawyer and got another power of attorney. So now in the meantime, my grandfather stopped talking to me. Someone who I cared very dearly for. He stopped talking to me. He refused to talk to me. And sorry if I get a little emotional, but the one day he called me over and he said, Jay, I don't want you to take care of me no more. Aunt so-and-so is going to do it, and I want you to give her my medication. And at that moment, I knew that that was the last time I was going to see my grandfather. I handed her the medication. I said, is this what you want? And he said, yes, this is what I want. And I still have the recording because I recorded all the conversations with my aunt and my grandfather. And I went over, I grabbed this medication from my house, and I gave it to her. And I said, Pappy, I love you. And I hope you have made the right decision. And that was the last time I saw him. Even though he lived next door, he never came outside. He never came to talk to me. He never even so much as waved to me. They wouldn't let me in to see my grandmother, who was obviously, you know, bedridden by now. And I think it was like April 3rd or 4th or whatever it is, I saw him get helped down the stairs into an ambulance. And I looked at my friend who was, because my shop is right next door, I said, I bet you I will not see my grandfather again. And then on April, I think it was like April 10th or 11th, I went to the hospital because I had medical power of attorney of him. And they would not let me see him. I said, well, can you please ask him if he wants to see his grandson? And the nurse came back and she said, no, he doesn't want to see you. So that hurt like a lot. And on April 14th, 2021, my aunt went to my house. I was staying with my stepdad. Or my stepdad was staying with me. It doesn't matter. And she told my stepdad, she didn't even come to tell me that my grandfather had passed away. So my dad came out back into the shop and told me that, you know, my grandfather had passed away. And all I could, I was out of it. My anxiety went through the roof. My heart started freaking skipping beats. And I had to get up and walk. I was angry. I was upset. I was pissed. I was anxious. I was nervous. I was a thousand different things. And mostly because I knew that this woman did not take care of my grandfather the right way, you know? So I went to my grandmother's house, like I said, next door. And she was parked in the driveway, and I told her that her power of attorney was now over and that she needed to get the fuck out of my grandmother's house, because she was staying in my grandmom's house with my grandmom. And she said, no, I'm not leaving. So I called the police, and the police said, we can't make her leave. I said, she doesn't live here. She doesn't belong here. They refused to help me at all. So I had to hire a lawyer. Now, like I said, single dad, take care of my kids. I'm still paying all the bills for my grandparents. Taking care of my father. I had to pay a lawyer $3,200. Now, mind you, I didn't have no money. This was coming out of tax money that I had saved up to pay my taxes and stuff, you know, for the business. So I got behind on my taxes to pay this lawyer $3,200 to come up with an agreement that she was to let me see my grandmother. And as soon as my grandmother passed away, as bad as it sounded, she was to vacate the premises. So in the meantime, they stole my grandfather's car, which did not belong to them or my grandfather or my grandmother. It belonged to my grandfather's estate, which now belonged to my grandmother, which in turn belonged to me because I was the executor of his will. So they proceeded to steal the car, give it to his daughter, which they had no permission to do, called the police again. They wouldn't help me. They said it was a civil matter. I said, how's it a civil matter? They stole the car. So anyway, they turned out, they found out that they couldn't license the car or register it or anything because, well, it's not their car. He still owed money on it. So I had to keep paying the payments for the car, keep paying the payments for the insurance because it's, you know, it's a brand new car, paying my grandmother's bills, paying my bills, and I got very behind on my taxes, like I think $8,000 behind on my taxes. In the meantime, I was not allowed to see my grandmother. So I called my cousin up, who I was raised with when I was younger, and he made sure that I got to see my grandma. He came up here and he asked to see her. And then he said, oh, we got to invite Jay in, you know. And they didn't want to act that way in front of my cousin because they didn't want no one else to see what they were doing, you know. They accused me of taking out a mortgage on the house. I did not. That mortgage was from 2009 when my grandparents had got it. I had nothing to do with that. They swore up and down that I did. Whatever. They were accusing me of stealing, all kinds of other stuff. So we went in, and my grandmother was very happy to see my cousin. She said, I'm not going to mention his name. She goes, you're still alive? She was so cute and so sweet. She was 89 at this point. And I just started crying. My cousin started crying. My grandmother started crying. It was like we knew that that was the last time we were going to see my grandmother, you know? And she knew it too. Because she started sleeping like 23 hours a day. The doctor put her on hospice, whatever. There's a lot more to the story, but I'm not going to bore you with that. I bored you enough for 58 minutes. Oh, and to mention my grandfather, his funeral, we couldn't even have a viewing for him because when he went to the funeral home, no one wanted to tell me where he went. So it took me a day or two to find out where they took him. And then when I contacted the funeral home, it was one of the funeral homes that I had already used previously for other members. He couldn't have a viewing because they refused to let me cremate him like he wanted to be. And he ended up waiting so long that he couldn't have a viewing. So we couldn't even have a viewing for him. So he got cremated and he sits on my shelf back here. And anyway, back to my grandmother. So winter came, you know, and I still didn't get to see her. I wasn't allowed to see her. She stopped coming to the door to wave at me. She stopped going to the window to wave at me. It was like she was in a little prison, you know? And I think it was like January 2nd. An ambulance pulled up and I saw the ambulance and I said, what are you here for? And she said, oh, your grandmother was on sitting on the toilet and she threw up and projectile vomited on the wall. And I said, well, is she okay? Because my aunt would not let me in. And I had to show the lady my power of attorney papers. And then she said, yeah, your grandmother's okay. She's sick. And she's sleeping now. And I said, okay. I said, but she's going to be all right. And the lady said, yeah, she's going to be okay for now. I think she just didn't want to tell me ultimately what the outcome was going to be, even though I kind of already knew. And a few more days went by, and I had rented Ghostbusters Afterlife, and me and my son had sat down, and we started watching it. It was about 7:58 at night, p.m., and in the beginning part, you know, the dude gets killed in there, and you know, his ghost goes flying across the cornfield, and the ghost started flying across the cornfield, and my phone rang, and I saw it was my aunt, and my heart dropped. I knew what it was. I didn't want to answer, but I answered, and my aunt said, Jay, it's Anna and Evelyn. I said, yeah, I know. And she said, your grandma passed away a couple minutes ago. And I lost it. I didn't know what to do. I mean, I knew what to do, but, you know, because I was prepared, but I couldn't think straight. It was crazy. And I told my mom, my daughter and my oldest son, and they went over. I couldn't go in the house. My son went in. My daughter went in. And she was sleeping on the bed. Well, not sleeping, but, you know. I saw her through the window and the door, and I just started bawling my eyes out. I'm not afraid to say that I cried like a little baby. And so my son and my daughter made sure that she had passed away. And I called the funeral home and everything because we had plans. And yeah. That was January 7th, 2022, and it was my mom's birthday. I lost my mom in 2016 to breast cancer, so it was kind of weird that she passed away on my mom's birthday. And so my Aunt Lil passed away in 93, my great-grandfather passed away in 2003. My mom passed in 2016. Pappy passed away in 2021. And now my grandmother was gone. So basically it was just me, my dad, and my kids. That side of the family has no longer spoke to me. They will not speak to me. I guess my aunt kind of, you know, got me kind of kicked out of that side of the family. She told him I was stealing from him, even though I had evidence and proof from the police department, the elder abuse people. Nobody cared. Nobody wanted to listen. So now here I am. I got the house with a mortgage, and, you know, I had to pay to have it cleaned out and everything else. Now I'm still in tax trouble. But that's okay. I wouldn't do anything different. But not that you needed to hear all that. But it goes with the anxiety. My point is, I let my anxiety keep me from doing a lot of things in life. From that first anxiety attack that I had when I was like 8 or 9 years old, There's a lot of people that I didn't talk to. There's a lot of places I didn't go. A lot of things that I wanted to do that I never did, all because of my anxiety. And I did not want to take the drug route. I did not want to be on antidepressants or any of that crap. Fast forward till today. It's been 3 years now since my grandmother passed. My anxiety is getting better. I still have heart palpitations once in a while. I gained a lot of weight. I went up to 325 pounds, so now I'm struggling with my weight. I'm fasting and trying to do that. But my anxiety still, to this day, gets the best of me sometimes. There are days when I do not want to leave the house. There are days when I just don't feel comfortable. I feel, you know, that still that thing of something's going to happen if I leave the house, you know, I pick myself up, I dust myself off, and I just make myself do it anyway. But yeah, it's a sucky way to live life, you know, thinking that you're going to die, you know, and have a heart attack or whatever else. And, yeah, that's ADHD with anxiety. And throw in there, you know, having white glove syndrome because you're afraid to go to the doctor. That makes it even worse because now you can't even go to the doctor for the doctor to tell you there ain't nothing wrong because you're afraid he's going to find something wrong. So with that being said, and that's an hour and 6 minutes of your life you'll never get back again. And I hope you liked my story. And just being myself, getting it out there. If I had any advice, it would be don't let the anxiety rule your life. Don't let the nervousness rule your life. That's why I'm having such a hard time with this podcast. I'm trying to get comfortable talking to you guys. And I'm trying to share my life, even though I'm usually a pretty private person. And I'm just trying to get you guys to see a little bit what goes on inside of someone's mind that has that chemical imbalance, and that it's not a bad thing. It can be a very good thing. Except for the anxiety. That's a very bad thing. And a lot of people that have ADHD have very bad anxiety. Like I said in previous podcast episodes, I may help someone. Maybe. I don't know. If I do, that's great. I've learned some tricks. I'm going to give them to you now. Little fun fact. The human mind cannot have an anxiety attack and do math at the same time. So if you do math, more than likely, you'll stop a panic attack. I try to multiply very large numbers in my head. But the problem is, I got very good at multiplying very large numbers in my head. So I started having to divide and then, you know, having to do algebra in my head. And I've gotten pretty good at it. So, yeah. I look completely normal on the outside. But, man, sometimes I'm a wreck on the inside. Sometimes I'm doing math. And sometimes I'm zoning off. And my kids are like, "Dad, weren't you listening to me? Blah, 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 blah." And I'm like, "Huh? What?" And it's not because I wasn't listening. And, you know, they make fun of me, but I'm not going to tell them because, I mean, they probably will if they listen to the podcast, which they probably won't because they don't care about, you know, what Dad has to say. And I don't blame them. It's, you know, they're kids. But if they do listen to it, just know that I was not listening to you. It's I want to give them my full attention sometimes, but when they're talking, sometimes I'm having an anxiety attack and I have to do my math, or I have to do my breathing exercise, or I have to concentrate on a particular object in a room to kind of ground myself and pull myself out of that panic attack. And that's what I'm telling you guys to do. don't do antidepressants. Don't do that stuff. If you have anxiety, learn the breathing exercise. Learn the 5 in slow, 5 out slow breathing method. Do math in your head. Find something in the room and kind of ground yourself with it. Like, oh, that's a nice vase. You know, it has flowers. It's what color it is. Think about the object. That'll take your mind off of there. If you have a cell phone, only if you're not driving. Even if it seems rude to somebody, pay attention to the cell phone. Watch some TikToks. That helps me with my anxiety, watching TikToks. Watching Instagram, watching Reels. It helps. It gets me out of my head. And I guess it kind of just distracts me. So, hope that helps. And, yeah, if you have any more questions about anxiety, I've been living with it now for 40 years. So, through all kinds of scenarios. And I've let it take hold of me pretty good sometimes. And right now, I'm at the point where I'm saying, fuck anxiety. I'm 51 years old. And if it's going to kill me, it's going to kill me. What am I going to do? You know, I'm going to do this podcast. I want to talk to people. I want to tell my stories. I want to entertain people. Most of all, I want to do this as a primary job and monetize it and make money off of it. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to be honest with you because I can't be a mechanic forever. My hands hurt. My elbows hurt. I have carpal tunnel in both hands. My knees hurt. My back hurts. My feet hurt. And I don't have a very good retirement plan, so because I spent all my money taking care of everybody else. So hopefully I help somebody. And I hope you enjoyed the podcast. And if you want to know more about anxiety, maybe someone just to talk to, maybe someone to listen, or maybe someone to give you a little advice about anxiety, then, hey, go on TikTok. Find me on there, the ADHD Mind. Go on Clapper. Find me there. Same thing, the ADHD Mind. Or you could just email me at the J Experience. It's the word the and the letter J Experience 0228 at gmail.com. Message me on there. Email me. And we'll talk. So if you hung in this long, thank you very much. I appreciate you. I hope you're safe. I hope your families are safe. I hope you live well and prosper. And we'll come up with something for the next episode. Have a good night or good day, whichever you're listening to this for. Have a good one, everybody.